Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. about midway through the show, we'll be talking to Tony Leah of Unifor, the author of a very important book about a significant moment in labor history. We're going to be asking about this Stellantis business and the future of automaking in Canada. Let's talk about the obvious, what they call it, you say the gorilla in the room. This is the maniac in the room, I guess, 600-pound maniac, the Caligula on a golf cart. You know, it's kind of hard to deal with somebody who doesn't know his own mind. This is where the world is. Easter was celebrated yesterday. And so on Easter morn, the most significant date in the Christian calendar, celebrating the Prince of Peace, the one who said, "This is my commandment to you at the Last Supper, love one another." So the most Christian leader of the Western world, the one who likes to gather his fellow, what are they, disciples? Anyway, they gather often at the White House, and he looks at his desk, and they put their hands on his head, and they all close their eyes, and somebody says something. He didn't go to church yesterday, but he did open the day with what the media calls expletives. He put out a message, which was his little message of peace on Easter Day, was to say, open the effing straight, you crazy bastards. That was his message to the world. Or he says, I'm going to blast you to hell. And there are no voices. Here's a historic kind of moment. That once upon a time, you'll have to trust me on this. There used to be Christian leaders in America. And I'm not talking about Billy Graham, because that's more of a show. But there are actual leaders of major churches whose opinions were valued, and they would say important things on important dates that would be shared with the rest of the population because they were considered dignified, honorable, truthful believers, and they had carefully worded Christian messages. One of the most famous, and I would really recommend you look him up, was Bishop Pike, P-I-K-E. He might be a distant relative of mine. I'm going to look into this. But Bishop Pike was the leader of the Episcopal Church in America, which is the American form of the British Church. And he would be quoted on important moments. If there was a nuclear test, for example, they used to do them in Nevada to kind of brighten up the casinos. They would do them, you know, on the ground. Anyway, Bishop Pike would say something about it. And he would say, you know, we're instructed to beat the swords into plowshares, and our leaders should always be working to maintain and deepen our commitment to peaceful resolution of our differences with other states. It's a duty because all souls are equal, and he would say something important. And I'm not saying that Pike was the only one, but it was just they were looked to. I don't see contemporary media caring at all. somebody made a decision. Someone threw the switch, as it were, and they stopped talking to major leaders. And I don't just mean Christians. I happen to be talking about them because it was of Easter, but their views were important. Now we have this phenomenon. I guess the word for it is decadence. I don't know. In terms of the faithful, that you have people who I would frankly characterize as Elmer Gantries or fly by night, who gather people around their TV sets and sometimes tell them to touch the set in order to get the message, but send the money to the headquarters. They don't bring messages of peace. They bring crazy messages of adversarialness, anger. Recently, Donald Trump had in the White House the son of Billy Graham, and he made a bigoted kind of presentation. He has been a openly nasty Islamophobe. And people talk about hatred. Here he is in the White House. And he is known for his message, baiting another faith. Additionally, there is, of course, the issue of Catholicism. If you follow closely the thought, if we're going to call it that, of the Graham family and of their particular school, they're not happy with Catholicism. And it's very striking that people talk about Trump, you know, the Christian. But America has had a deep division from its founding, a lot of unpleasantness between Catholicism and Protestantism, with the Protestants being represented by people like Billy Graham. So we have a and there's a kind of respect shown by the media towards these little gatherings, but it actually is quite sectarian, and it is not it is an Americanization of, I would call it, of Protestantism. It's a dangerous thing, and of course it came to its pure fruition on Easter Sunday, when Trump made this extremely violent and obscene statement, something which leads us to the biggest question in my mind, which is, and it has to do with the Canadian leadership, the British leadership, the French, China, Russia, others. This language is not just over the top, as they say, but it really should lead to withdrawal and restraint on the part of everyone. I've mentioned often the proverb, soft words turn away wrath. At the moment, we should be calling, he created an existential problem for all of us. And that is not what is it about him? It becomes, what is it about us? He is our president. Everybody acknowledges that. And the way we know he is the fear that he creates. So we have to ask leaders to function now, demand that there be no cooperation with that government, because Donald Trump is an individual. He holds an executive position, it's true. But states that can see what he's doing, countries, population, certainly the population of Canada, every poll shows, is way ahead of their own government. I mean, by way ahead, they understand what's going on. And they do not want to cooperate with this. They do not care to be blown to smithereens, nor to engage in attacking a sovereign country that has not, with which we're not at war. Frankly, I don't know. I think that the only one I know of actually is Avi Lewis, frankly, as I know he's got the leadership of the NDP, has correctly identified the conduct of Trump. He speaks of it out loud. Certainly we don't hear that from the other parties. They're actually all lining up. We have to expect restraint and say there won't be any cooperation with any of the escapades now being conducted by the U.S. and Israel. There are peace proposals, ways to solve this issue. They're on the table. But we have two states which are really come totally, they're using the word rogue, but those two states, U.S. and Israel, definitely have goals. They definitely know in terms of the military and the overall strategy. They know what they're doing. Israel is taking southern Lebanon. They may take all of Lebanon. Today's news is that leaders within Israel are calling for that. And in the case of the United States, there is no opposition to the main themes struck by the governments over the years. Both parties are neo-colonialist in their outlook, and the object is to have hegemony in all corners of the earth. I would say imperialism does not like a vacuum. Any place that is not clearly under their hegemony must be put under their hegemony. And their goal is to counter those states which are big enough to say no to them. In the case of Russia, saying no to NATO. NATO, by the way, was organized in the name of stopping the expansion of communism. Communism in Russia has gone away. And there was an expression, peace dividend, because the great contender, the great opposition was gone, and we were all going to benefit. We're going to beat the swords into plowshares. And actually, we just decided to make more swords. And the U.S. has spent itself into extraordinary lengths now with it. Not only do they have 800 military bases around the world, this Trump administration, and I think everyone has agreed, there is an individual running the place who is extremely belligerent, semi-coherent, incoherent, and who threatens anyone and any place with annihilation. And he has asked for trillions just only days ago, in addition to what they already have as a regular budget, and the Democrats are going to give it to him because they all agree on, yes, we have to have an empire. And if there's a dog barking somewhere against us in the Middle East, then we have to have another increment of weapons to kill the dog. This is where we are in terms of the danger. We need restraint on U.S. Operation, and it should come in the form of just simple non-cooperation. Simply, there are institutions. I see that Jeffrey Sachs, who's widely respected, he's certainly a very brilliant individual, has been very helpful because he used to be a key member of the U.S. administration, and he, as he reminds us always, he knows them all. Actually, he did a lot of damage in my memory, but he's qualified to talk as one who knows the power structure of America. And he's been saying something we said on the Taylor Report, which is there is the United Nations. It was not founded in order to satisfy Washington. It was founded as a to stop powers that violate international norms, to stop them by dialogue. It doesn't mean to stand right in front of them and fight with them necessarily, but it is a restraining body on all powers, and it is rapidly in losing its independence, I would say, but it could be restored if countries like Canada would show more interest in it rather than to go into to that body and echo whatever's on the minds of Washington. What they need now is going and actually underlining the UN Charter against wars of aggression, targeting individuals, threatening war, murdering the leaders of sovereign states. That should be, it's pretty simple English. We could easily write up a little agenda for the people who represent Canada. And there are, again, well, there are some voices that are saying these things, and we should be, all of us, supporting them. I want to mention just this little episode of the plane. It's very bizarre. You remember that when the war was initiated the first time in June, at a time when there were peace talks were going on between the U.S. and Islamic Republic. And while the talks were going on, one of the parties attacked the other party, which is horrendous. And now they did it again. They did that past June of 25, and now they did it in February. They were again having talks. And these were, by the way, unsupervised, if you'll notice. In order for talks actually to make any sense, you have to have a third party that is kind of the witness. You know, you have to have a context. And so you did have, actually, Bahrain was hosting the talks. And Bahrain said, if I have it right, it might have been Oman, but there was a third party, and it was an Arab state. And they said they, in their opinion, the talks were actually worthwhile, had content, and were progressing. While that was going on, again, there was an attack. And this one by the one that has led to the current unending assault with the promise of hell from the President of the United States. It's a mad zone. And again, everybody in Canada, anybody with them who can reach out has to point out that these attacks and the conduct of the U.S. Should be identified as the source of the problem. And on, specifically on the latest attacks, we were told, I want to get on this matter of the plane, that the United States had eliminated everything that Iran had. They had no air defense. And frankly, the evidence was certainly strong that there is very little in the way of air defense in the case of Iran, which makes them extremely vulnerable to a superpower that can, as he says, rain down death on Iran. By the way, he misspelled rain. So we know it's coming from the Donald himself because he can't even spell the word rain. That proved to be not entirely true, that they did apparently shoot down two U.S. planes. And the panic on the part of Trump and Netanyahu to this phenomenon is we should note the subjectivity, the strangeness of the people conducting the war. They immediately turned it into a victory story that they had lost two planes. Actually, it turns out they've lost more than two. Now we find out that there were helicopters that were destroyed. But they decided almost instantaneously, both Trump and Netanyahu went on TV complimenting each other. And Trump said it was a wonderful rescue operation. Well, there wasn't anything remarkable about it. It's interesting that he's trying to make this into a big, you know, how wonderful we are. I remember that when they bombed Yugoslavia, bombed Serbia, an American plane was shot down, and they rescued the pilot in that instance. Of course they do that, if you think about it. They know where the plane is. They have all sorts of aerial support. They have the coordinates. When the pilot goes down, if he survives, they have immediate contact with him. Technology has advances to that sort of this is not new. So if you have already planes that are and groups that are designed for rescue, you're the one who knows where the pilot is, and you have your plane already in the air, and you have a selection of aircraft that you can operate to pick up the pilot. There's nothing remarkable about that. Your opponent doesn't know where he is. They have a rough idea, but they don't have this sort of capacity you have. So to turn it into some kind of tremendous triumph is actually suggests that they're in more trouble than we probably thought they were. And then in this attempt to control everything, they made it sound sort of like it was immaculate, that nothing untoward happened. They just went and got him and brought him out. But now we see the pictures of helicopters and types of plane on the ground that have been destroyed. Islamic Republic said that they destroyed those. The U.S. said now the U.S. has had to add addendum to their little story. And they say, in carrying out the rescue, of course, we had to use helicopters. And so rather than let those helicopters fall into the hands of our opponent, we destroyed them ourselves. And you say, oh, congratulations. Funny you didn't mention that at first, but now you're doing it. And then you have Bibi, who's telling you he's going to, he thinks you're wonderful because you did that. And this shows how great you are. But I would say, so we have, in this case, we have two planes, and I guess one pilot rescued. I don't know the details. And when they tell you that this shows how well we're doing, I would say, this is a war involving thousands and even thousands of aircraft. It's involving a country with 90 million people and an army in the U.S., et cetera. So the number two in terms of rescue, attack, whatever it is statisticians would tell you that's a pretty small sample. Let's see how this evolves, because I wouldn't be telling pilots, don't worry, every time you go down, we'll be able to get you. it doesn't seem like that's very likely. But we're living in such a strange environment, information environment, that non-significant data is presented to us as an achievement. And I've noticed that the U.S. media plays right along, whatever. For they all claim to be, you know, to notice that Trump's a little addled, and his number two is only slightly crazier than he is, Mr. Hegseth, who, as I mentioned before, seems to be suffering from push-ups. Is treated, the insecurity of the U.S. political environment is such that Fox and CNN and CBS and everybody all agree on these stories, which are basically shallow and uninformative, but they all become very patriotic or super patriotic and carry and follow that narrative, which is why I say we have to have restraint. One last point on before we take a break here is this issue of negotiations. It's very easy to have negotiations, actually. It's China, Pakistan, other states have offered. The UN, of course, is a forum where it could actually be worked out. There could be, but please notice that we're talking about Washington. And this is absurd because Israel is involved. So are we talking about three parties talking? Because actually, we've all bought into a kind of a comic book version of this where the only parties would be the U.S. and Iran. But a party to the war that's probably done more damage than the U.S. has been the Israelis. And so to ask Trump, oh, you know, how are talks going? It's if you don't say, are you able, are you going to control these talks, and has the leadership of Israel agreed that you have their proxy? But the U.S. plays a game of saying, oh, we're talking. Well, that hasn't got anything to do. I would say there's nothing to talk about because Iran is attacked by two countries, both of which violated the UN Charter, practiced aggression, practiced assassination. They openly boast of assassinating. So you can't have a talk that involves only the U.S. You have to say, no, bring the other guy because two of you are attacking me. So if one of you says he wants to talk, that's a non-starter because they're obviously working together. Last thing on that, just to note for history, Israel and the United States have not carried out joint attacks. In the past, Israel would be called upon to do dirty work. For example, when Iraq had a nuclear plant for civilian purposes, which was inspected, by the way. It was built by the French, and the French swore that this had no military element to it. You couldn't make bombs with it, et cetera. France was, you might remember, France part of the Western world. The Israelis attacked it on their own, just destroyed it. And the U.S., pretended that they didn't approve of that. And when the U.S. went to war with Iraq after going through the fundamental exercise of degrading it, please, I'm sorry to use that word, but that is a strategy. They first of all pound the using air power and using sanctions. They both basically, it's a siege technique. They fire from a distance so they don't lose troops. And they burn down, destroy, break, smash until they have an opponent who's weakened. And when they think that he's weak enough, then they move in for the kill. it sometimes takes 5 years, sometimes 10. People following headlines don't always notice that it's actually a pattern. At any rate, they did that to Iraq. And when they went after Iraq, they didn't take Israel with them because the Arab, so-called Arab world, of which actually doesn't exist, but anyway, the Arab world, they said, would never approve of Israel being involved in fighting Saddam, because if they did that, they would lose, they said, the enthusiasm of the Arabs. Now, we've actually crossed the Rubicon, and Arab leadership, so-called, let's go state by state, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, they actually want this war, and they're ready, and they have moved to the side of Israel and the U.S., which this is a new phenomenon. And the leaders of the attack are Tel Aviv and Washington. The followers are the various monarchs and absolute rulers. And I don't see anybody in Canadian Parliament who care very much about democracy and human rights ever saying, why are we involved with absolute monarchs who actually still engage in public execution of chopping off heads of women for adultery, et cetera? They say these things about Iran. They don't say it about Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and these places. But these monarchs now are following their pocketbooks, and they want this war. But they don't want to get hurt. But, you know, the problem about wanting war is that if you want it, you may end up with it standing on your chest rather than being standing on his. So this is the Taylor Report. And, yes, I'll just conclude. There is no peace prospect at the moment. I'm going on, and Pedro's living patiently with my timetable. I have to say again that Canada's role, and I would urge people in Parliament, please find your brains and your courage to point this out, is that the Western world is now talking about the Strait of Hormuz like it belongs to them. It does not. It does not. And you cannot have an adversarial approach. If you don't include Russia and China, frankly, as part of the world that shares that waterway and that trade route, if you don't do it as a world project to guarantee security of everybody in transit, then you're part of the Trump's war. And Canada at the moment is part of Trump's war. So is Britain and France, Germany. If they talk about getting together themselves to guarantee it, what they mean is they're going to take it. So either it'll be done Trump said it bluntly, we'll use our power and we'll smash it. And then you have to help us out by going in there and securing it. He means for the West. You couldn't get a more blatant expression of colonialism. And I guess the term is neocolonialism. And they're always doing it in the name of, you know, religion, freedom, all those dirty words that they really just destroy the content of. I think I've covered it pretty much for, there's another matter I want to take up later in the show, Rwanda, but I think we'll take a little break here with Brother Bob Dylan of Long Ago. I don't know whatever happened to him, but anyway, it's a great song, and then we'll talk to Tony Leo.